Hello, this is Joey Romano, and you're listening to my Black Book. Before we dive into the episode, I want to quickly let you know who I am and why I'm doing this. A few years back, I started a website called Subway Art Blog, in which I took a bunch of photos of art in the subway, most of it illegal, and interviewed a few artists here and there. And this website led me to start paying attention to graffiti and street art. And these things sort of became like a huge hobby of mine. I started taking tons of photos and posting them on the internet and getting tons of feedback. And I became more than a little obsessed with it. It took a while, but after sort of following the scene for over a year or so, I started to meet some of the people who are doing this stuff. I've heard stories from them. I've watched them work. And I've uncovered just a lot of, like, sort of secrets that this subculture holds. And it's all very fascinating. And I feel like there needs to be a forum to share these stories. And so there's plenty of blogs that do a really good job at introducing people to street art. But I want this to be something a bit more casual, a bit more personal, and less filtered, less edited. So, for my first episode, I decided to go with a friend of mine who goes by the name Gilf. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So, we have to get one thing out of the way before we really start this interview. And I think you knew this was coming.
Always comes. This is always the first question.
We gotta debunk some rumors.
Yeah.
So where does the name Gilf come from?
Well, Gilf was a word to me far before it was ever a word to anybody else. So it doesn't have anything to do with MILF. It has nothing to do with, you know.
Nothing to do with grandmas?
Grandmas or girls. American Pie or any of that bullshit. Nothing to do with that. Gilf was a word that I made up with some girlfriends when I was very young, 8, 9 years old. And it kind of created like this secret language that we kind of went back and forth with each other on. And it just represents a very creative moment for me and something very personal and something that not a lot of people would ever be able to explain.
So the word's completely made up?
Totally made up. It was just a word that we would say, like, when we didn't want anybody else to know what we were talking about.
But what did it mean amongst you and your girlfriends?
It changed. It was always varying. So, like, if there we were having
you
a conversation,
sentence for me, yeah.
But I can't. I mean, it would be like if we were having a conversation about sex, and we were like 9 or 10 years old, and their parents walked in, and we would just, like, you know, substitute Gilf for sex or whatever it was. Like, that was just something that we would change up so that nobody would know what we were talking about.
Okay, fair enough. That's
so. It kind of made sense as, like, you know, as a pseudonym to be like, nobody knows who I am. Like, this is just the word that represents me because it can represent anything to anybody because they're just looking at my work. They're not actually looking at me.
Right, right. So. Except if they think you're a grandma they'd like to fuck.
Well, you know, everybody can assume whatever they want.
So how did you get your start creating art? You've been at this for how long now?
I started making outdoor work in 2008.
Okay, and how long have you been creating art in general?
Well, I went to art school, but it was kind of by fluke that I ended up as an artist.
Okay, so you have had formal training.
Formal training, yep. Okay. Yeah, I have a bachelor's degree in art. But when I got out of school, I was doing interior design, I was building furniture, I was doing a lot of other things. I wasn't really focused on art. But all that stuff was just really confining and not very creative to me.
Sure.
And so I just felt the need to kind of go outside and put some work up.
Cool. So tell me about your body of work in general. I'm familiar with, like, the stuff you're doing now, but I don't really know how you got your start in 2008. So,
Well, 2008 was kind of a pivotal time for me as an adult, kind of coming into understanding what's really happening in our world and, like, the realities of the military-industrial complex and, you know, all the wars we were fighting, the Bush administration, all that. I was really angry, like really angry. And I was trying to have conversations with people left and right, and everybody would be like, wow, yeah, so the Yankees did really well last night. They would just completely change the topic of conversation and not be able to like engage with me. And I got really frustrated, and I was like, well, I don't really know how else to express myself except visually. So I started cutting stencils, and I started going out in the middle of the night with my friends who weren't street artists, weren't graffiti kids. Like, nobody was okay with what I was doing. They were all thinking I was crazy.
Were you a fan of any street artists at the time?
Well, it was funny. I was living in Nolita, and on my way to the office every day, I would walk by this beautiful swoon piece. It was on this, like, cyan, bright blue door, and it was, like, a half block from my house. And every time I walked by it, I was just like, wow. And it just moved me so much. I realized, like, if her work could do that to me, I could do that for somebody else. Okay. So that was kind of where it started. I was like, and it was a woman, and it just, you know, like, her work was so delicate and wonderful, and my work's obviously very different, but it still just was able to kind of keep me coming back for it.
What were your first stencils like?
Rough, very rough.
Imagery, text?
A little bit of both, actually. Oh, just like now. Yeah, just like now. I don't. It hasn't changed that much, I guess, in terms of that scale. One of the first pieces I did was the image from Abu Ghraib, which is the guy standing in the box with the electrical wires, tagged to his fingers. And it was, if you see something, say something.
Right. It's funny that you should say that, because I actually took a photo of that, and I believe I may have put it on Subway Art Blog.
That's funny.
When I went to Miami 2 years ago, I saw it. Was that fountain, I believe, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. It was funny, because I did it in a downtown alleyway, and I went back the next day, and a rack had tagged over it, but it was about a rack.
Right,
and I
Iraq, was like, R-I-A-K.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I was, like, really beside myself, because I didn't, you know.
That's actually a crew. I don't know if that's one person, actually.
Well, yeah. No, of course it's a crew. Yeah. But, like, they did it, and I was just, you know, I had no idea who they were. I was, like, so naive. I was like, oh, what is this?
I bet a bunch of things were right here. Oh, my God, what does this mean?
So, yeah. Then you use Google, and you figure out what you're talking about, and you're like, oh, okay. All right.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Interesting. Little side note.
So, could you talk a little bit more about the subject of your work? So, you...
Sure.
You do sort of political imagery. What's the text like?
I tend to negate common ideas of, you know, what people are trying to push on us. I try to get people thinking in a different way, so maybe they would challenge what they're being fed. So the imagery and the text can kind of sometimes conflict, and sometimes, you know, they're meant to... just push your brain to like the next level and discuss something completely different.
Okay. And okay, so you got your start with stencils, but you're obviously doing more than that now. So what, including your like fine art, gallery work, what sort of mediums do you find yourself using now? Media, I should say.
Media. Well, I'm using house paint. I'm using, wheat pasting, a lot of, my gallery work is starting to like take a little bit more of a three-dimensional turn. So there's some materials that I'm using that are new to me. Like I just did a neon piece.
Right. The Jesus saves, Jesus enslaves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neon sign. That's one of my favorites, especially since it's a sort of a homage to the graffiti writer Jesus saves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I when I first saw his tag years ago, I was looking at it, and every time I saw it, I saw Jesus and slaves, like, every time.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
So it's just like...
Yeah.
You finally got into a piece. That must have felt good.
It did. You know, it evolved a lot. It wasn't originally going to be a cross. It was just, you know, there were so many different ways to do it.
It worked out perfectly on the cross, though.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. It was kind of like...
So those of you who haven't seen this piece, it says Jesus across the horizontal... axis of the cross, and then the vertical axis says enslaves, and the S in the middle of Jesus crosses the S in the enslaves, and so the neon light sort of flickers on and off with the EN
and the L
and the EN and the L, right? So then, yeah, you see the two different phrases flicker back and forth. And you've displayed it at your at one of your solo shows, and also at was that Scope in New York this past year?
Cool. Yeah, yeah. It was a fun piece to play with because I'd never done neon, and there was just a lot. You know, there's when you're starting with new materials and working in that kind of realm, there's a lot of questions that you're, you know, you're not. I'm not just using spray paint that I know how to use. You know, it's a completely different medium, so there's always challenges that come up and stuff. So it was good.
Right, and you use a lot of really interesting tools in your studio, right? You have like a vinyl cutter, and what did you buy something else recently?
There's a CNC being built as we speak. Okay. So, yeah, it'll be good. It's I mean I focused on graphics when I was in college, so I naturally like kind of gear myself towards using the computer in a lot of my work.
So you use like Illustrator for a lot of your stuff?
Okay. Yeah, Illustrator is a big tool for me. Photoshop, AutoCAD, stuff like that. So, yeah.
Okay. And you've also done stuff like this this piece with the screws at Fountain in Miami this past year. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? So it's like sort of combines your textual work with your more sculptural stuff.
So I've started doing these like zigzag pieces, which have like an optical illusion element to them, which is text that's kind of buried within these 45 degree bends in lines. And I started doing them. I was really excited, and the guys at Fountain were like, "Hey, do you want to do a wall outside?" I was like, "Yeah, of course." So I was like racking my brain, like, "How am I going to do a stencil of this? Like, I don't want to hand paint it. It's going to take forever." And so,
you decided to do something that would take even more
forever. Yeah, forever turned into like 70 hours within like 5 days of just like literally screwing a wall.
So you created this text out of how many screws did you have to
estimated it was like 17,000. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I don't think my body is like fully aligned itself since. Like, yeah. I'm like jacked on my left side, but I've definitely learned how to like drill with my right hand now, which is nice.
Okay. Oh, you're a lefty.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now I'm ambidextrous with a drill, which is convenient.
I bet that'll come in handy for next.
The next one.
Screw project.
Yeah, but it was really fun because.
What did the piece say again? Sorry.
So the background, it was all in wood. The background was plywood, and on the back it said "un," like U and N. And then within the text in the screws, it said sustainable. Oh. And so it was called The American Dream, discussing how that's kind of gone to shit. And it was fun because I was starting it, and, you know, like a lot of people were like, "What the fuck is this girl doing?" Like, you know, all these like major painters are coming in and just like banging these walls out in like 4 or 5 hours or 10 hours or whatever. And they're just looking at me. I'm just like in the corner, like using my drill, like.
I remember when I got to Fountain, like maybe a day or two before it started. There you were working, and I was like, "Oh my god, there you are!" And so I think at that point you had finished drilling all the screws in, but you had the sort of like the paper in the back of it that you know was your guide. Yeah, so you're ripping the paper through.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it was like really. It took how many hours just to tear the paper outside of the screws?
Probably a couple. Yeah, that was a tedious process for sure. Everybody's like, "So how are you getting the paper out?" I'm like, "I don't know. I'll figure it out. I just got to get the screws in the wall." But
that's dedication.
Well, or like mania.
Or,
I don't know.
Or madness. Yeah,
yeah, probably. But it was cool.
I think all artists teeter.
Yeah, we definitely all have a little percentage of that somewhere than others for sure, right?
Exactly. Which side are you on?
Probably more.
More on the madness side?
Yeah. Okay. It's fun. It's much more fun.
So you've started showing in quite a few galleries recently. When did you get your start showing in galleries? And how is this sort of... I mean, you got your start doing more street work, and then the gallery thing picked up, right?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I wasn't making studio work at all. I mean, when I started doing the stuff in 2008, it was because I needed to say something, and I didn't expect to go into a gallery. I wasn't thinking about it like that. It was just more like, this shit's crazy, and I need to fucking put it on a wall.
Right.
So the gallery stuff started happening. I mean, I started showing myself at Fountain in 2010. Got and it. That's kind of where it started. I shared.
Oh, so you started your own booth at Fountain?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so cool. I shared a booth with a friend the first year in 2010, and then I showed myself in New York, in Miami, in LA. They did LA in 2010, and then in 2011 I did New York as well. So, and then you know from there, 2011, my booth was like. I thought it was presented fairly well, and just people started paying attention. And, you know, I got a couple gallery shows here and there, and then just kind of fed from there.
That's exciting. And you've also recently made the jump into full-time artist, right?
Yeah.
That's super exciting, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What's that like to make that transition?
You know, it's been a lot more challenging than I expected. You know, it's like, oh, that's everybody's dream, is to not have to work for anybody else and just make art. But when you get to that point and you're like at the beginning of your career.
It becomes a full-time job, right?
Well, and I was full-time to begin with. I mean, I was bartending and like staying up until 4 in the morning.
Well, yeah, of course.
You know, because that's just what you have to do. But once you start making work to pay your rent, it changes a lot of things. You have to sell work. So
you have to make work and make sure you sell it.
Yeah. And that's like, it can really hinder your creative process if you're feeling like you have to produce shit that you think people are going to buy. So I'm actually in a really interesting spot right now because I'm like, I feel like it's actually hindering me from making stuff. So I don't know. It's an interesting transition and I have to work through it, but I'm excited. I mean, God knows, you try to do something for a few years and you get successful at it. And then it's like, there's all these other problems that come up because of it, you know? So it's a learning process.
I mean, so your work has like definitely changed since you made this transition, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
not just because of the transition, but in general, I'm sure, too.
No, I mean, there was a big leap in January with the show at Arkelazy Hamburg. I mean, the work was a lot more...
Right. This is your solo show called...
Eye Exam,
right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, most of it was all optical illusion-based stuff. There were, like, magic eye pieces from the 90s, and, it was fun to be able to, like, jump out of the box a little bit.
Is there a word for the effect that you use in a lot of your pieces with the text that make it really hard to read with these 45-degree angles?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know what it would be called. Okay. But
The idea of a lot of the work was also that it's you have to, like, work really hard to sort of read it, some of it,
mm-hmm.
Because you create text and out of these lines, right?
Right. Well, and it's funny because that's a very big jump. It's actually the opposite end of the spectrum of a lot of the street work that I do, which is meant to almost kind of be like an advertisement. So it's something simple that you get right away, you look at it, and you're like, oh, I get it.
I feel like even though some of your image-based work, it takes some it takes some thought to realize what it means. For example, you have the image of the girl holding the sign in Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
A casual passerby is not going to know what that says. So.
Right. I tend to put up a QR code with that one. Just so,
oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. The Malala piece. Yeah. Just because she gets torn down so often because she has something written in Arabic that a lot of people are like, oh, my God, this must be terrorism. And they tear it off the wall, which is really annoying.
You should make T-shirts about with that image on it and send people on airplanes.
Yeah, right? Everybody will get pulled over and, like, strip searched. Yeah. Or just the text, just clothing all written up in Arabic. Get on a plane, see how that goes. I don't need to put myself on any more lists.
you're on some lists.
Eh? You never know.
Yeah. Speaking of lists, so I've noticed in the past, maybe just a few months alone, I've noticed you've been doing more like straight graffiti, like tags and roller pieces. How did this come about?
Well, I've been having some struggles with doing like the whole mural circuit, so to say.
Okay.
I don't know what it is about having to like put in hours and hours and hours into a piece and have like a bunch of people come and watch you and kind of the gentrification that it adds to, especially in Bushwick. Like, I'm starting to realize that
you're a Bushwick resident, so mm-hmm. you directly feel the effect that your own work has.
Sure.
In Bushwick.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like realizing that I'm the asshole that pays for the paint. I put my time in. I put the piece up in the wall and I'm gentrifying myself out of my own neighborhood. I mean, what am I doing? You know, so I've kind of taken a step back from that and realized like I was only doing it because people were giving me the walls. It wasn't something that I was really seeking out. So I have a lot more fun doing things in the middle of the night and, like, saying what I really want to say. I've had some different mural groups tell me I can't put certain things on walls because it's too provocative. And my work's not that provocative. I'm not, like,
right,
going really off the deep end. So for people that say, like, for people that, like, tell me that they need to censor what I'm doing, makes me not want to do it.
Especially somebody who's, like, asking, like, specifically asking a street artist to paint their wall, you'd think that they would be open to
what we,
some controversial ideas.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah. So the whole legal walls thing has kind of become something that I'm not so interested in anymore. And okay, I feel like the spirit of why I started kind of gets lost when you're doing something on a legal basis and you've got people coming and introducing themselves to you while you're trying to, like, be in your artistic moment and stuff. So I've just decided to, you know, have more fun and less stress.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Has your illegal work ever gotten you in any trouble?
I got stopped once.
By who?
Police officer.
Okay. Hey, you, stop right there.
Yeah. Well, I was with a friend and they rolled up on us and yeah, it wasn't a fun situation, but I got off easy. It wasn't such a big deal. So I was weed pacing, so it wasn't like they didn't go crazy on me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a very general broad question. What's next for Gylf?
Well, studio work is definitely going to become a lot more three-dimensional, just with the new fun toys that I have showing up in the studio these days. There's going to be, there'll probably be a bit of a lull between now and
when. I mean, you've had, I can't even count how many shows you've had recently. It's probably, with just within the last few months, it's probably been at least 5 shows or something like that. If you include the art fairs, it's probably closer to 10 or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple months. Definitely busy couple months.
So there's going to be a little bit of a a little lull in the schedule, right?
Yeah, there's a cocooning period, I think, happening right now. Just because I need to really get myself back up to speed and to, like, get into the different mediums and kind of get my head around a three-dimensional perspective. But the outdoor work, I don't know. I guess there's the urban work, and then there's some other things that I kind of have in the works. Nothing I can really talk about because nothing's for certain yet, but some bigger projects, more like campaigns versus just like one or two pieces here and there.
I like that face that you made when you said that.
Oh, the mischievous?
Yeah, they're bigger works. Bigger projects.
Yeah. They're fun, though. It'll be very exciting when I'm gonna be able to share them with everybody. Awesome.
So you have actually 2 shows open right now that people could go check out right now. Open till July 13th is Critical Condition at the Jim Kempner Gallery in Chelsea, which I pass quite a lot because I work around there, and it's like a really fancy building. You should go check it out. And you have a piece outside the building, too.
Yeah, on 23rd on their steel wall. It's pretty fun. Little piece,
right? And you were telling me you made it out of magnets, so it's this text-based piece, like sort of similar to some of the work you have in the show. And like you have a vinyl cutting machine, but you did this piece by hand because it was made out of magnets, right?
Yeah, the magnets somehow just didn't fit in the vinyl cutter, which was really disappointing.
It has to be some sort of like sheet of magnet paper that you could put into that machine. No?
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how hard I searched for magnet in the tri-state area. I drove to Jersey, like way out in Jersey, to get this stuff. It was because all this course is like very last minute. It's like you pitch the idea to them, and like 3 days before the show, or like a week before the show, they're like, "Yeah, sure, do it." I'm like, "Okay," and so I had to do a little scrambling. But yeah, the magnets were tough to cut out. I still have like not fully like formed nerves in the end of my middle finger on my left hand. It's all good, though.
That's intense, yeah. Just like the screw piece.
Yeah, no, you got to sacrifice a little bit sometimes, right?
That's impressive. Mm. And you also have a piece, or is it one piece or multiple pieces inside the Krauss Gallery?
2 pieces for the Emerging to Establish show.
Mm-hmm. Emerging to Establish, that's at the Krauss Gallery in the Lower East Side, and that's actually the first part of that show is open until July 24th. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's any last comments that you wanted to add.
No, just thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. You could check out Gylf at GILFNYC.com, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the website for this podcast is J-O-W-Y dot, sorry, no, it's blackbook.jowy.com, so blackbook.joey.com. The music for this episode has been provided by Rap Gang. You can check them out at soundcloud.com/rapgang. This is Joey signing out.